in Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Tuesday, June 30th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
House Bill 3058, that's the fast-track LNG bill, came off the tracks as the legislative session wound down.
In Italy, a trainload of LNG literally came off the tracks and blew up a seaside town.
And Iraqis celebrate the end of the occupation and wonder how foreign oil companies made off with all their petroleum profits before the ink was dry on the document. That's the price of democracy.
Portland area weather today, sunny, high near 80. Tonight, clear, low around 50. Tomorrow, sunny and a little warmer, near 90 with a calm or a light north wind, and beautiful for the next few days.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. The 2009 session ended and we killed House Bill 3058. That was the one that would have fast-tracked LNG pipeline permitting processes so that the companies could lay pipe straight through property owners' land. Immediately, this, of course, is the eminent domain on steroids bill. It's no wonder that Bradwood Landing introduced this bill and Palomar and others lobbied so hard for it. My guest this morning has been fighting the Bradwood Landing LNG terminal for years and never backed down. Good morning, Dan Sears, and welcome back to the KBOO Airwaves.
Good morning, Chris.
Thank you so much for being with us. Dan, tell us what happened.
Well, at the end of the session, when the smoke cleared after the fight over House Bill 3058, the bill did not pass. It was not released from the Senate Rules Committee, thanks to the members of that committee who decided that House Bill 3058 was not good public policy, which is what we've been arguing in both the House and the Senate for several months. We see this as a huge victory for LNG opponents throughout the state, and a big setback for the LNG industry, which had pushed very, very hard to make this change to state law, to make it much easier for them to obtain permits to destroy wetlands and cross rivers throughout Oregon.
What role did lobbyists play? I see in an email from Brett Vandenheuvel that at one point in Salem, no less than nine energy company lobbyists were observed roaming about in their natural habitat.
Yeah, no, there's no question that, you know, the LNG industry put an enormous amount of effort, time, and money into pushing House Bill 3058 forward. They were successful in getting it through the House, but the bill died in the Senate because of massive citizen opposition from Oregonians all over the state. You know, we're talking about farmers, foresters, fishermen, conservationists. It was an unusual thing to see so many energy lobbyists fighting basically everyone else in the state of Oregon who stood up and said House Bill 3058 is really a bad idea and just bad policy.
For the amount of money that they spent trying to get this bill done, they could have put solar panels on every house in Astoria. Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Dan Sears with Columbia Riverkeeper. Thank you, Dan. And we'll, of course, have you back to keep people posted on how the LNG debate develops. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, place your bets. Is Peter Guerin, the former director of the Port of Astoria, a proponent of the Bradwood LNG terminal? Guerin was sentenced yesterday to 1 year of probation and a $5,000 fine for allowing potentially contaminated dredging material to spill into the Columbia River, a violation of the port's permit.
By the way, yes, he is.
Oh.
The Waxman-Markey climate bill is a big greenwash. The cuts it proposes are much lower than those being pursued in the UK or in most other developed nations. There are mind-boggling concessions to the biofuels industry, including a promise not to investigate its wider environmental impacts. There's a provision to allow industry to use 2 billion tons of carbon offsets a year, which include highly unstable carbon sinks, like crop residues left in the soil. That's another concession won by the powerful farm lobby. These offsets are so generous that if all of them are used, U.S. industry will have to make no carbon cuts at all until 2026. Samantha Chirillo is with me this morning to talk about this bill. Good morning, Samantha.
Hi, Chris.
Thank you so much for being with us this morning. Can you talk about this climate bill a little bit? Tell listeners what a dead giveaway it is to industry lobbyists.
Sure. Some people are calling this bill reckless and deceptive. I actually think those are not strong enough terms for it. It would prevent the EPA from denying new coal-burning facilities. And if we see more coal-burning facilities, any benefit that this bill might have would be undone.
It's a climate bill, all right, just not the climate that we want.
Exactly. So we definitely need to be, be eliminating loopholes and concessions that would be giving the biggest polluters the ability to buy offsets, and not only that, to be exempt from certain things in the bill. We don't want to be giving tax credits to timber companies for burning forest biomass for energy from public forests. And right now, it would include post-disturbance logging. So it could include logging mature and older forests after fires, which is very destructive and would actually create more emissions than the fire itself. And we are out of time, and this bill would not reduce us to the level we need of CO2 in our atmosphere to avoid the catastrophic effects of climate change. We definitely need to take action now, and if this bill is not going to, it could actually make things worse, then we need to go back to the drawing board and come up with something that's actually going to work. And one of the problems we've seen with the UK climate legislation and now the US is that it doesn't do the hard work up front. It delays what we really need to do, and that in and of itself is a really bad way to go. It's unfortunate that people are getting some, as you say, greenwash. That's exactly right, from a lot of sources. And it just makes people think that we are doing something important, and when actually we're not, and we could make things worse with this bill. So people need to be contacting our senators, Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley. They can call a toll-free Capitol switchboard number at 1-800-460-0813 to reach them.
Say that once again, please.
Sure. It's 1-800-460-0813.
Thank you so much for that, Samantha. My guest this morning has been Samantha Cirillo with Cascade Summer 2009. Thanks for that, Samantha.
Thank you, Chris.
Where was the Army Corps of Engineers when the Pamplin juggernaut was despoiling the Willamette River with its massive sand and gravel operation? Probably knocking back a couple of brews at the VQ, but thankfully it's a different story for the Umpqua River and its major tributaries near Roseburg. The Corps of Engineers has denied 5 applications for permits to commercially remove sand and gravel in or near the river. The Corps says the proposals didn't comply with the Clean Water Act guidelines, and such activities aren't allowable if a suitable alternative could do less harm to the ecosystem.
In Washington State, water is becoming an issue. But in Cascadia, the region that the rest of the nation turns to for that cooling rain, well, it seems that the times, they are a-changing, but a hard rain is not going to fall. The fact is that we are running out of potable water. State and federal officials are meeting today with other stakeholders in the Yakima River Basin to talk about how to improve water supplies there. The State Department of Ecology, Federal Bureau of Reclamation, Yakima Nation, and water rights holders are all expected to participate.
For centuries, farmers have been cleaning and fertilizing their fields by burning. But that's all over for Oregon grass seed farmers, thanks to the white-collar cowboys who buy up agricultural land in rural areas, plunk down a McMansion, and proceed to live the country life. Think Parvenu Hicks in Ralph Lauren shops and asthma inhalers. Lawmakers have completed action on a bill to phase out most field burning by Willamette Valley grass seed farmers.
Finally, a ray of green light. And it's the gold of pot at the end of the rainbow. Oregon is a step closer to growing industrial hemp with a House vote yesterday. Industrial hemp, marijuana's straighter cousin, can be used to make clothes and food products, and let's not forget fuel. The bill would allow the production, commerce, and possession of hemp products. Democratic Representative Jules Bailey of Portland demonstrated the diversity of industrial hemp products and displayed a T-shirt saying, Senate Bill 676 is about rope, not dope.
First Lady Michelle Obama announced yesterday that Oregon will be getting $14.6 million in federal stimulus money to upgrade and expand community health centers. Michelle Obama says the grants will help health centers in Oregon serve more people who can't afford insurance.
Further proof that Oregon's claim to sustainability is a greenwash comes in the form of U.S. Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood. LaHood will be in Portland tomorrow to see the Portland streetcar line. LaHood has called Portland's light rail and streetcar networks a model for how the nation can use infrastructure to fight global warming and pollution. Unfortunately, the state as a whole is no model at all when it comes to eliminating the actual sources of climate change, unless there's money changing hands as well.
Mm-hmm. Across the country, people are watching policymakers in Washington and dealmakers on Wall Street walk away from the rubble without a scratch. And people are asking, why were they saved and I'm losing everything? Today, in at least a dozen cities, the foreclosed are protesting. They're demanding that a group of mortgage companies who benefited from federal bailout money participate in a government program designed to prevent foreclosures. The program is called Making Home Affordable. The problem is getting the companies in question to participate.
And following on from that item, foreclosure is, in fact, the specter that haunts every household in the state, with the exception of those who live in the highest ivory towers. Yesterday, the Oregon legislature approved a bill that will require mortgage lenders to meet with borrowers before foreclosing on their homes. The bill would mandate that mortgage companies meet with them in a timely fashion to try to come up with a loan modification. If the bill is signed into law, the mortgage lenders would need to submit an affidavit that they complied to procedures explaining why the borrower does not qualify for an alternate payment plan.
From the It Can't Happen Here department. In Italy, a train carrying liquefied natural gas derailed and exploded yesterday outside the seaside port of Viareggio. Officials evacuated about 1,000 people from the town after the explosion caused fires and the collapse of several homes. At least 14 people have been reported killed, and that number is expected to rise. LNG escaped from one of the derailed cars and caught fire, causing the explosion. And here we are seriously considering allowing out-of-state interests to site LNG terminals and pipelines in Oregon. Picture the Columbia River burning. Imagine Mount Hood forests on fire.
And that was just a train. This is just one train car. We're thinking millions and millions of gallons of the stuff in remote areas in many cases. Yesterday, and continuing today, Iraqi officials are auctioning off oil contracts to foreign oil companies. The intent is to revive production in six developed oil fields that have suffered from neglect since the Iraq War began in 2003. Forbes has reported that more than 30 companies have already taken part in the bidding, including BP and ExxonMobil. At the same time, the Kurds in the northern Iraq semi-autonomous area known as Kurdistan have discovered an oil field containing as much as 3 to 4 billion barrels. There's your next war right there.
It was a dark and stormy night. A Washington State man has won the coveted San Jose State University annual Bulwer Lytton Fiction Contest for the worst writing. And here it is in all its glory. Folks say that if you listen real close at the height of the full moon when the wind is blowing off Nantucket Sound from the northeast and the dogs are howling for no earthly reason, you can hear the awful screams of the crew of the Ellie Mae, a sturdy whaler captained by John McTavish. For it was on just such a night when the rum was flowing and Davy Jones be damned, Big John brought his men on deck for the first of several screaming contests.
Good.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Tuesday, June 30th, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Janet Anderson. The KBOO Interim AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillium Shannon, in for Kathleen Stevenson on sabbatical. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. Alas, no screaming contest. You're listening to member-supported KDOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support, and your support only, keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein.
And thanks for listening. Have a good day.